You're listening to the world famous Chick Whisperer podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Everyone, once again, this is Scott McKay from XMY Communications talking to you from sunny San Antonio, Texas for another star-studded edition of the Chick Whisper podcast. Today, I have a new friend of mine with me. His name is Mike Macapinlack, and he is from Social Confidence Mastery in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, a place that's a lot colder in wintertime than it is in San Antonio, Texas. But hey, there's just as many cowboys there. So Mike, welcome, man.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. It's a pleasure. I'm pleased to have just done your summit for you, your Social Confidence Blueprint Summit. We had a great conversation there. Seemed only natural to have you on the podcast. And you're a subject matter expert in this area of shyness.
Mm-hmm.
And the topic today is turning shyness into boldness. And you know what? I was looking across the annals of Chick Whisperer history back to 2007. And I think we've kind of skirted around this topic, No pun intended, but we've never really hit it with a big heavy hammer.
Okay.
So here you are, and we're going to talk about this whole idea of shyness and how guys can, well, like I like to say, beat it over the head with a shovel till it stops twitching and turn it into being bold. And of course, men are better off when they're attracting women if they're bold than they are when they're shy, aren't they, Mike?
Totally. No, I totally agree with you.
So talk to me about what shyness is, and maybe talk to me a little bit about your personal history with it. What makes you qualified to talk to these guys about it?
Sure. Yeah. So my story started back in 2003 when my family and I immigrated from the Philippines. And my first couple of years here in Canada was it was a huge struggle, Scott, you know, for three reasons, actually. Number one, back then I was massively overweight. You know, I used to weigh 200 pounds. You know, I had a 36-inch waist. And keep in mind, I'm only 5'5". So my friends back in high school used to call me Big Mac, right? You know, as a clever play on my last name. Number two, I didn't speak English when I moved here, so I found it really difficult to make friends, you know, let alone get dates. And number three, I had really bad social anxiety back in high school. I remember when the lunch bell would ring, everyone would run to the cafeteria, but instead of me joining them, I'd run the other way and hide in a bathroom stall and hide there and eat my lunch there because I was too terrified to mingle with the other kids. So that's kind of what happened, Scott. You know, eventually, you know, that went on until my early 20s, and, you know, it kind of got to a point where I was sick and tired of feeling sick and tired. So I started to do something different about my situation.
You know, I think a lot of guys are already listening. Because by God, if you were hiding in a bathroom stall in high school to eat your lunch and you become this outgoing, bold guy that I know you to be now, then I think you've perked up a lot of people's imaginations.
I'd hope so.
Talk to me about this. I mean, you're coming from the Philippines. You're going to a place where obviously the weather is even different.
Yeah.
On top of the people being different, the social dynamics being different, your language is different. I mean, how much could a guy be expected to pull off brilliantly when you're even thrust into that situation? I think that would make almost anybody shy. Except I think a lot of times when guys find themselves in that position, they still blame themselves even if the circumstances are a lot tougher for them. Don't you think that's true?
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of shifting from a victim mentality into a more of a victor mentality, if that's the case.
You know what? My youngest daughter's middle name is Victoria.
Oh, really? Nice.
Just because I like that mentality. I didn't want to name her like Victimia. So I'm with you 1,000%. So what do you think shyness is? Define this whole idea for me. What is it that's causing you to run into the bathroom stall to eat your lunch?
I think for me back then, Scott, you know, it's just a lack of experience, right? You know, I grew up in a very conservative Filipino family where academics was really pushed on me. So it's basically what my day looked like was go to school, go home and do homework and do it again. So for, you know, the majority of my developing years, I missed out on a lot of the, you know, the social experiences that typically, you know, kids my age would have because I was always being hammered to, you know, go to school, get good grades. So once I'm done high school, I can go out there and get a good job. And the advice that my mom told me when I was younger, if I wanted to get a girlfriend, was I need to do that and make a lot of money and the girls would come. And I believed her wholeheartedly, Scott. So I did follow the whole thing, you know, went to school, got good grades. After that, I, you know, got a really high paying engineering job. I was, you know, in my 20s now. And I was like, where's the girls? Like, I followed exactly what my mom had told me, right? To do all these things, to really pursue academic excellence and sacrifice my social experiences. And so to me, that's kind of like learning how to drive an automatic car and expecting yourself to be able to drive a manual transmission car, you know, like same car, two different skill sets. You know, it's kind of like you learning how to play table tennis doesn't automatically make you a good tennis player. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, I think it does. Absolutely.
Yeah. So expecting yourself to be good socially when you've been practicing how to be good in academics, like that doesn't make sense either. But I was led to believe that, you know, things will just take care of itself, and it didn't.
Well, I tell you, I personally can relate to that because I was raised to be good in academics also. I was always the smart kid, and I was also very sick when I was 2 years old. And my parents just decided, well, you know, he's small for his age. He was sick. He probably won't ever be good at sports or anything. So let's just push him into academia. Mm-hmm. And then also being the oldest, I didn't have an older brother to kind of show me the ropes. And I was a little socially awkward. And then what happened for me, and some of these guys who listen to this show know this already, is I got sent to probably the most prestigious private school in Baltimore where I grew up. And I was there on an academic scholarship. So I wasn't the rich kid. My deal pales in comparison to yours. But all of a sudden, I was sort of a fish out of water too. A lot of really, really sharp kids coming from some of the more famous and, you know, prominent people in the whole metro area. You know, those kids were sitting beside me in class on a daily basis. And I'm just this lower middle class kid who showed up who doesn't know anybody. And these kids have even been going to school with each other for years now. So, you know, yeah, that whole idea of being a fish out of water really cuts into your confidence. It's a lot to ask a kid to go into a situation that's completely foreign where you don't really fit in by design. You don't fit in and expect you to thrive socially because, you know, no one's going to give you any quarter. They're not going to say, oh, well, you're from the Philippines. Let's welcome you with open arms and learn your language. Or, you know, hey, you know, you're not rich and your dad's not famous like my dad who plays for the Baltimore Orioles. Well, you know, hey, let's let you be a member of our clique anyway. And it's just not going to happen.
No, it doesn't.
And of course, at those big private schools, you know, a lot of kids go there on athletic scholarships. So the sports are prized. You know, if you're a good football player or lacrosse player or baseball pitcher or even a wrestler, for gosh sakes, you know, you're one of the cool kids. And even though they pride themselves on academics at schools like that, you know, the cool kids aren't the smart kids.
Yeah.
So all of that is just a huge drain on your confidence. So I can relate. I want to know what you did, Mike. What caused the turnaround for you? How did you take that situation where you are indeed a fish out of water and turn it around? Now, you said it took a while, right?
Long time.
Well, what happened eventually?
Well, like it started off with just, you know, like reading books and listening to audiobooks. And then eventually back in 2008, I decided to hire my first coach. And I took a weekend program where it totally transformed my life. And that experience, you know, like led me to more and better things. So eventually the company that coached me hired me as an intern and I became one of their coaches. So for 3 years, we traveled all over Canada and I was part of the team, you know, teaching these guys how to improve their social confidence. And that experience also led me to work with some of the other coaches in the United States. And then eventually I started hosting virtual summits, you know, getting to know other thought leaders like yourself in this space. And then I discovered that there is like social confidence as a pattern. You know, eventually everyone is starting to say the same thing. And I'm like, huh, I wonder if this is it, if this is the blueprint. So I've condensed it down into 6 steps. And that's exactly what I've followed to transform my life. And that's exactly what I teach my clients as well.
You know, it's interesting. You talked about the patterns. I remember one time about 6 years ago, this guy who I don't think is even in the dating advice business anymore sent me a cease and desist letter and was threatening to sue me. And I, at the time, Mike, I didn't even know who this guy was. And he said, I was stealing all of his newsletters and writing all of his ideas. And I said, all right, well, you know what? Maybe you better send me some of your newsletters so I can look and see what you're talking about. And, you know, he thought I was bluffing and this, that, and the other. But finally, I got him to calm down and send me the newsletters. And sure enough, he's writing about the same stuff I am. His ideas are very similar to mine.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I said, you big chucklehead, we should be working together, not suing each other, because we actually agree on stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, neither you nor I have patented the fact that women respond to a man's lead and that women like to be playful or whatever it was he was talking about in his newsletters. It's just we're both good with women and we figured this out.
Mm-hmm.
It's what works. It's not like some invention. So, yeah, I mean, I think what you just said there was a wonderful golden nugget that guys should take to heart. Which is, you know, if you're studying social dynamics, if you're studying how to be a better man, how to be more confident, you know, how to be less shy, more bold, like we're talking about here, how to get better with women, all that stuff. Look for patterns in the teachings you're getting, you know, especially if people are from different walks of life. Start seeing what the commonalities are. Now, you do have to be careful because I think there's been some bad teaching handed down from the pickup industry over time. I think some of the early, I'll call them super gurus of the niche, you know, the Mysteries and David D's of the world, you know, had some ideas that kind of just got passed on because people said, well, you know, hey, he taught it, it must work. And then they put their own little twist on it, but didn't really change things like the 3 second rule or are you a bad boy or a nice guy? You got to be one or the other. No one's thinking maybe, hey, you know, maybe there's something like a great man that's neither this bad boy jerk or Mr. Nice Guy. No one even thought that way. And no one stopped to think, hey, you know, maybe that 3 second rule is really good if you're shy, but what if you waited 30 seconds and maybe she stepped away from that crowd and hung up her cell phone? Or, you know, what if her husband shows up from the next aisle in the next 20 seconds? Maybe sometimes it's good to sit back and let the game come to you a little. But, you know, no one was thinking like that. But notwithstanding that bad pickup advice that's kind of been handed down for no apparent good reason, Kino Escalation's another one of my, you know, infamous favorites. God, that just so doesn't work. But, you know, if you look for patterns of what seems like it works and you go out and you try it and by God, it does work. And, you know, women seem to be responding to it or socially you get better results. Then, you know, that's pretty good advice because the stuff that works tends to work across the board. And, you know, like you, I'm an international person. I've been to the Philippines and traveled the world a little bit. And I found that socially, even when there's a language barrier, a lot of the same social dynamics really do hold true worldwide.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. No, I totally agree.
So talk to me about some of the steps you took.
Yeah.
Once you realized you wanted to get over this, that this was the first day of the rest of your life, what did you do to turn shyness into boldness? I think these guys want some meat and potatoes. We need to give it to them.
Absolutely. So the first thing that I did was to change my mindset because back then when I got started into this, you know, very similar to you, I found a lot of, you know, like pickup advice, right? And I started chasing strategies and I didn't really understand the principles why things were working. And then eventually, like what I said, after doing further research, you know, it really starts with the way you think because there's no amount of strategies that you can learn that'll have any long-term success if you don't change the way you see yourself. So what I do nowadays, you know, and I've never skipped this, I can't remember the last time I did do this. Every single morning, I take a moment to myself and just condition my mind to see my ideal day, like my perfect life, right? You know, I'm really conditioning my mind to see more of what I want. And then once I have a clear vision of that, I started to really, you know, feel, get the emotions, you know, like once I've achieved that goal, like how does it feel? So that's the first thing that I do. I condition my mind every single morning to think of more of what I want rather than what I don't want. So that's step number one. Step number two was I worked on my charisma. So I've studied this extensively. And one of the books that I really love was a book called The Charisma Myth by Olivia Fox. And she broke down charismatic behavior into three parts. The first one is presence. So I'm sure you've met people like this, Scott, where you're talking to them and you know they're not listening to you, right? And, you know, I know I've had interactions with people like that. And to be honest with you, man, I felt resentful because I felt like there was something else more important that's going on in that moment than the conversation we were having. So it's really important to be present and make the people that you're with to be the most important person in the world, just even for that moment. So that's the most important part of charisma. The second one is to exude power, you know, because people will tend to accept whatever you give them. So if you dress in a way that's, you know, that you look more successful, so, you know, like wearing a sports coat or like a leather jacket or even standing tall, making eye contact, smiling, you know, moving slower, you know, all these things are learned behavior. It's not an innate ability. And then the last thing is to kind of like what you talked about in the summit, is to be a warm person, you know, just be a genuine guy who wants to add value to other people's day. So that's step number two, is to develop your charisma. Number three is to upgrade your personal style. You know, I'm a firm believer in this, Scott, because I truly believe that your style introduces you before you even speak, right? And, you know, for guys that are listening to this, you know, when you're out at the bar and, you know, there's pretty girls walking by, like the first thing you notice is what they're wearing. You know, when you're at a networking event, you start looking at what the other guys are wearing too. And immediately you're making snap judgments about what type of person they are, right? And it's one of those things where you can always do something about it. Like, you can't change your height, you can't change your skin color, you can't change the way your face looks, but you can always do something about your fashion statement. Step number four is to overcome your social anxiety. So I treat this like going to the gym. One of the things that I hate about pickup advice when I was learning it was, you know, to just use brute force and willpower to be able to overcome social anxiety. Where, you know, I know for me, I know I touched on this earlier, I used to weigh 200 pounds and I lost weight gradually. I didn't just, you know, go to the gym and started busting heavy weights. You know, I eased myself into it. That's why now eating healthy and working out is a permanent part of my lifestyle. And same thing with approaching new people. You know, I go through a process where I start small, you know, kind of like the same advice that you give in the summit. You know, I talk to everybody, Scott, whether it's the barista at the coffee shop, you know, the old guy sitting beside me, because I truly believe that every single person that I talk to has a lesson that they can teach me if I'm just genuinely curious to get to know them. And then step number five is I learned to improve my conversation skills. You know, I learned what makes a good story. I learned how to, you know, tell good stories. I learned how to start conversations. All those things have a formula, right? And the last thing I think is the most important part, I've been able to design my perfect lifestyle. Because, you know, I'm sure, Scott, you can agree with me on this. There's nothing more attractive than a man who knows exactly what he's getting out of bed for. So those are the six steps that I followed.
Well, I think a man should know what he's getting into bed for, too.
Well, there you go. That's step 6.5 right there.
Life sort of just revolves around bed, if you think about it.
Yeah.
I kid. No, you said so many wonderful things there, and I don't even know where to start. But one thing that you touched on there was this whole idea of charisma. And I think that being charismatic is something that's indeed elusive to a lot of men. They can't even define it. And I think you've done a wonderful job of giving a simple framework by which you can discover what charisma really is. Another word I would use there is influence. Mm. You talked about power, and you talked about, you know, the whole Michael Jordan-esque idea of making, you know, everybody on the court look better when you're on the court with them, making everybody feel better about themselves, which I think is the essence of being a cool guy, by the way.
Exactly.
That's one word that we haven't brought up yet, is how to be cool. And I have an audio program I did on that years ago. And the essence was, hey, look, if you make people feel cooler when they're around you, then you're going to be seen as a cool guy. If you have that upbeat energy about you and you're optimistic, which I think is another thing that people who are charismatic are. I mean, like a Tony Robbins is really charismatic and he's never really pessimistic about anything.
Yeah.
He's never bearish about anything. Everything is, you know, tomorrow's a new day and blah, blah, blah. And he's always got that upbeat energy and he wants you to be a better person. And that comes off as charismatic. I think you really hit the nail on the head there. And when you go about that practice of being charismatic and reaching out to other people, you know, it's going to be easier to be social because people will rise to the occasion and help you out more. I think one of the sad truths about being shy is, since it is fear of social interaction, it causes you to be more timid and it causes mm-hmm. you to be more afraid. And people who are afraid, especially men, cause other people to feel afraid, especially women. You know, if you're talking to a woman and you're leading with this fearful, shy energy and you're feeling awkward and scared, she's going to start feeling awkward and scared. And that's the opposite of what I talk about all the time as a big four man, of making a woman feel safe and comfortable in your presence. Mm-hmm. So when she doesn't feel safe and comfortable, then she's not feeling that urge to be feminine for you. She's going to say, you know, I think I kind of hear my mother calling and she's going to have to leave. Mm. But when you show up and you are charismatic and you're making people feel better about themselves, what you're going to realize very quickly is that even though we've been so self-absorbed in our shyness and, oh my God, what's going to happen to me when I'm out doing social things? What happens when you wake up and realize I don't want to be shy anymore and I'm going to reach out to other people, I'm going to help them feel better about themselves, is the light bulb goes on, right, Mike? And you realize for the first time, wow, the whole rest of the world is usually made up of shy people too. They're living in their own shyness.
Exactly.
And you realize that when this light bulb goes on and you start inviting other people to feel better about themselves, all of a sudden they start being more amenable to being social with you because you've made them feel good. And the next thing you know, you're given more leverage to lift yourself out of that pit of shyness. Am I onto something there?
Yeah, you definitely are, man. I know for me, the moment I started realizing what I like about myself, so that's another practice that I do every single morning. You know, I've got a gratitude practice where I write down 10 things that I'm thankful for. And part of that is, you know, I write down the things that I really like about being myself. And I think the more you look for the things that's good about you, the more you start to really feel comfortable in your own skin and you stop comparing yourself to other people that way.
Wow, that's huge. I think especially here in the Western world, United States, Canada, Britain, Western Europe, we are so insulated from what's going on that's wrong with us because we have the financial means to camouflage it all, that people really just start brooding over that one thing that's wrong with them.
Mm.
And if I only had this one thing going for me, then I would be fine and all my troubles would be solved. Meanwhile, I get on the phone with someone else and their problem is something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the problem that this other guy wanted solved, he doesn't even ever think about because, I mean, it's just second nature that he doesn't have to worry about it. But for him, it's something completely different. Then if you were to get back on the phone with the first guy and go, wow, that guy is self-conscious about that. That's nothing. I'd never even noticed that, you know.
Yeah.
It's what I call the cartoon bubble effect that I've talked about in some of my writings. We all have this miracle in life together, you know, yet separately, where we're only seeing light through our own eyes. We only live life as ourselves. So we've got all of our fears, all of our foibles, all of our mistakes, everything we're ashamed about, everything we feel stupid about. We're intimately associated with that. But we look at this woman who looks incredibly beautiful in that little sundress and we go, well, she's just perfect. We slap a halo on her and nothing's wrong. Meanwhile, she's looking at you. And if you could see what's going on in that little cartoon bubble above her head that's invisible to everybody, if we could see what the thoughts were in her head, you know, like you see in a cartoon strip, she would go, oh, my legs are too short and I have acne and I'm not very smart and, you know, I'm just a girl. Some women are even, that's what it is, you know?
Yeah.
And crazy things go through their minds, but we'll never see it because we're dealing with our own stuff. But everybody's dealing with their own thing. And if we just realize that that is a common human condition, then maybe just for a second, we can suspend our disbelief that that's going on for other people, fight through it and reach out to someone and say, hey, you know, how can I make this person feel better? How can I welcome them and make them feel cooler and help their confidence? Even if on the outside, I don't think anything's wrong with them.
Exactly. I think one of the best things that I've done for myself, Scott, is, you know, again, that daily practice of meditation, because now I'm able to create that space, right, between what's happening around me and my choice, whether I respond or I react. Because back in the day when everything's so, you know, I'm always in a rush and everything's so frazzled, you know, like I'm so just like quick to react to certain things. But nowadays, you know, I take a quick moment. I'm like, huh, like what's really going on here? And sometimes I'll just, you know, the best thing to do is nothing. You just sit there and you're like, okay, well, this will go through and life will go on. So it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I love the idea of taking inventory of what it is that's valuable about yourself instead of focusing on all the faults for several reasons. I mean, first of all, it helps you get out of this mindset of if only I had this one thing fixed, then all my problems would be solved. And instead of feeling like a victim, suddenly you feel like, well, you know, look, I got all this stuff going for me. I should make good of it.
Exactly. I call that positive compensation, right? So I know that there are things that I can change, like my skin color, my height, my face, but I can always, you know, be more fit. I can always dress better. I can be more interesting than the next guy. I can be more passionate than the next guy. And for some people, I think for a lot of people, actually, that's enough.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things we're talking about here is transforming shyness into boldness. And this has morphed into a discussion of transforming shyness into all-around badass awesomeness, which I think is fine, too. But I think guys always associate being bold with being that cool guy, with being that fearless guy, or at least the guy who's not afraid of things that really can't hurt him in the long run. Mm-hmm. And it just feels really good to know that you have the confidence to believe in your own competence and go get this job done. And then that's when you boldly step up and do it. Boldness and confidence are integrally related, whereas lack of confidence and shyness are also joined at the hip. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I appreciate everything you're saying. What steps would you have for men to help them get on this road? Because I know sometimes when you're really shy and just the very thought of approaching a woman and speaking to her curdles your stomach. What are the first steps you would tell a guy to get over shyness?
So the first thing that they need to do is they have to set their goal, Scott. Like, they really need to get clear on, you know, like, what does improved social confidence look like? Like, they need to have a clear vision on what that looks like. So they, you know, get a piece of paper, write that down, and describe it in great, great detail. The second thing that they need to do is they need to start to understand themselves more. You know, again, you know, meditation, journaling about the things that they like about themselves, because they can't give what they don't have, right? So if they don't see themselves as someone worthy, then they can't give that to people. If they don't see themselves as someone enough, then like what I said, you can't pass on something that you don't already have yet. So that's step number one. You really have to understand who you are. Number two, kind of like what I said earlier, you know, you got to work on your charisma, right? Like, making other people feel good, making other people feel important. And then once you've got that dialed down, then you got to start to improve the way you dress. Because let's be honest here, you know, we all make snap judgments when we see other people. And that's like low-hanging fruit. You know, one of the quickest ways to feel better about yourself is to just dress better. And then number three is to start going to places that you enjoy and focus on meeting people there. Look, if going to the bar terrifies the crap out of you, then don't go there, right? Like, start small, just like going to the gym. If you haven't been to the gym for a long time, you know, just start by walking on the treadmill for 5 minutes. You don't need to start lifting heavy weights. And same thing with socializing. If the thought of approaching a beautiful girl or going to that networking event where there's a lot of cool guys scare the crap out of you, just focus on, you know, talking to older people or to the barista or whoever. Just build some positive momentum. Number five, again, work on your conversation skills. If you have to take improv classes, do so. You know, one of the biggest things that I've done to improve my storytelling skills is to just write more regularly. If ever I have a cool story that I know I want to share in conversation next time, I pull out a sheet of paper or my journal and I write about it so I remember it. And then the last part is you really got to start to figure out what do you want to do with your life, right? Because there's nothing more attractive than a guy who's living his purpose.
You reminded me before of how you were talking about personal style. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I would add as a tagline to what you were saying is, you know, when a person is a slob and they don't take care of themselves and they don't care how they dress and they wear dirty shirts and just wear, you know, Dockers and a button-down shirt, it not only betrays lack of creativity, which isn't very attractive, it betrays that they don't have anything interesting going on that translates to how they present themselves.
Exactly.
You know, like, I dress like my lifestyle, and my lifestyle is outdoors, climbing and chasing lions in the Serengeti and crazy stuff like that, and BMXing and surfing. So I wear a lot of stuff, and I'm a world traveler. So, I mean, I have accessories and things from all over the world, and I am this person that my clothing and my style portray. And if
exactly.
Your clothing is portraying something terribly boring or really unkempt, then what it does is it says, hey, look, you're boring, and also that you lack confidence. You don't even care about yourself much. You may even lack self-esteem to that degree.
Yeah.
So I think that is really, really massive. The other thing you talked about was conversation skills. A great step there is just to help people talk about themselves more. You talked about storytelling skills. You talked about doing improv. I also recommend that people learn the elements of comedy just so they know what is funny.
Exactly.
Instead of, you know, pawing around in the dark trying to figure it out. You mentioned an analogy before where, you know, if you learn how to only drive an automatic and you're faced with driving a stick shift, you're going to be like, what? You know, I think a lot of times if you know what's going on with a clutch and how it works, and you know what a manual transmission actually does and how it functions, it becomes easier to learn how to drive it. Mm-hmm. And I think that analogy holds true for humor. If you know what's funny, like irony is funny, switching around word meanings is funny. If you know how to do those things and you know that's why it's funny, then you can become more in tune to looking for those things. And the next thing you know, you're naturally funny. So I love everything you had to say.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And I want you to talk to guys about the social confidence blueprint because, man, this is your bailiwick, as it were. This is what you're known for. This is your life. This is your history. This is what you share with guys from your heart. I love that about you. So when I point guys to thechickwhisperer.com/confidence, what are they going to find there?
Sure. You're going to get a lot of free blog posts, you know, free downloadable reports about mindset, improving your conversation skills, overcoming social anxiety, creating a killer first impression. I also do a weekly live webinar where you can come in, you can learn a bunch of things absolutely free that can help you fast track your social success no matter how shy you are. So that's exactly what they're going to get.
And you know your stuff, Mike. I'm just getting to know you, but you're one of the more genuine guys I know who's giving dating advice out there. You're coming from this position of not having always been a chick magnet. You know, you were hiding in the closet eating your lunch. And I always have a special place in my heart for guys who have started from rock bottom and clawed their way up to the top of the food chain with women because, I mean, you know, I resemble that remark. I wasn't born with this silver spoon in my mouth when it comes to attracting women. So I really do think you guys ought to check out what Mike's got going on at thechickwhisperer.com/confidence. And it's worth checking out. Like you said, Mike, there's a lot there that's free. Just download it, join in your webinars, get to know you. Yeah, good stuff. I have one last question for you, man.
For sure.
We haven't talked about your dating life and your women much in this show. Has it improved some since high school?
Oh, man. It's like...
Talk to me, man.
Definitely.
Give these guys some hope.
Yeah, definitely day and night. You know, I went from, you know, begging my first girlfriend that I dated when I was 13 years old to, you know, like going on dates with girls that I just thought were out of my league. So it's definitely, yeah, it's definitely served my dating life quite a bit. And also my social circle too. I've got a lot of high quality friends all over the world.
Yeah, that's really cool. One of the phrases you just mentioned was one of the ones that makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. That's out of your league. Mm. Man, I think the greatest moment for any guy in his journey to getting better with women is when he realizes there are no longer any women who are quote unquote out of my league. Mm. I deserve whoever I get and I'm going to be the prize for whoever it is I want.
Exactly.
Yeah. That is confidence. That's the opposite of shyness right there. That's sure to make you less shy and more bold when you believe that, right?
That's totally true.
Well, it's been a great show, Mike. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been a wonderful conversation, and I'm sure a lot of guys got a lot of great, great ideas out of it and lots of actionable stuff too. So thanks again.
Scott, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And guys, if you're not on the newsletter yet, go to www.thechickwhisperer.com and get you some because I send you actionable advice that you can use on a daily basis, not only to get better with women, but also to have the career you want, the lifestyle you want, whether that's a location-specific entrepreneurship lifestyle or being a world traveler or climbing the corporate ladder, whatever it is you want to do, having more confidence like Mike and I have been talking about today, and of course, how to get the one woman you've always wanted and live happily ever after with her. That's a specialty around here. So go to www.thechickwhisperer.com, sign up for the newsletter, and I look forward to getting to know you. I do answer my emails when you write to me as much as I can. I certainly read every one of them, so I want to hear from you. Until I talk to you again on the next episode of the Chick Whisperer Podcast, this is Scott McKay. Be good out there.
The Chick Whisperer Podcast is copyright 2009 by X&Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to sign up for the X&Y Communications newsletter at www.thechickwhisperer.com. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Chick Whisperer Podcast.